you take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's like marijuana ought to be legalized. Good people smoke marijuana.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, March 9th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's episode number 904, and coming up on today's show in the news, the bill to end federal marijuana prohibition now has six bipartisan co-sponsors. In our cannabis focus, the federal government's pot farm in Mississippi is producing moldy weed for two federal patients. Our guest today features a replay of a keynote address this year from Men's Warehouse founder George Zimmer on stakeholder capitalism. In our drug war data mines, we'll take a look at a report from the state of Oregon showing no stoned mayhem on the freeways after legalization. And in the radical rant, we debunk the latest big tobacco talking points from the dastardly duo of Kevin Samet and Patrick Kennedy from Project Samuel. We're also taking a look at the recent comments by Attorney General Sessions that seem to herald more enforcement of marijuana laws. But first, let's get to the
covering the
headline
latest headlines
news
in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, March 9th, 2017. The ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act of 2017 picked up three new bipartisan co-sponsors, including two members of the fledgling Congressional Cannabis Caucus. The bill, sponsored by Representative Thomas Garrett, a Republican from Virginia, was initially joined by Representative Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat of Hawaii, and Representative Scott Taylor, Republican of Virginia, as co-sponsors. Representative Jared Polis, Democrat of Colorado, then joined as a co-sponsor last Wednesday. On Tuesday, Representatives Earl Blumenauer, Democrat of Oregon, Don Young, Republican of Alaska, and Justin Amash, Republican of Michigan, also became co-sponsors, bringing the total to three Democrats and three Republicans. Governor John Hickenlooper on Wednesday expressed reservations about two major pieces of marijuana legislation in Colorado, in one case citing concerns about the Donald Trump administration's potential crackdown. The Democrat pledged to veto a measure that won preliminary approval in the state Senate earlier in the day to allow pot clubs with local approval. To win his support, Hickenlooper said the measure needs to ban smoking indoors. Under the bill, Senate Bill 184, local governments would set regulations on pot clubs in their jurisdiction, but the governor wants it banned, citing a ban on cigarette smoking in public places, saying, quote, "Given the uncertainty in Washington, this is not the time to be trying to carve off new turf and expand markets and make dramatic statements about marijuana," end quote, the governor said. Many Rhode Island political leaders now seem to be leaning toward legalizing recreational marijuana, but not everyone thinks that would be a good idea. State Attorney General Peter Kilmartin is not on board with legalizing recreational marijuana. Tomorrow, he and other leaders will announce a united effort to stop the legalization, saying, quote, "With growing pressure by special interests to push forward with the legalization of recreational marijuana in Rhode Island, in partnership with Smart Approaches to Marijuana, the Ocean State Prevention Alliance, and What's the Rush Rhode Island will host a press conference to hear from individuals and organizations who recognize that legalization of recreational marijuana is fraught with public health and public safety problems and is the wrong direction for the state of Rhode Island," end quote. The Arkansas Senate on Tuesday rejected a bill to ban the manufacture and sale of food and drink containing medical marijuana. Senate Bill 333 by Senator Gary Stubblefield, a Republican of Branch, received 15 votes in support and 11 against. Because it would amend the constitutional amendment voters approved in November to legalize medical marijuana, it needs a two-thirds vote to pass or 24 votes in the 35-member Senate. The Senate approved a motion by Stubblefield to expunge the vote by which the bill failed, allowing him to bring it back at a later date. Stubblefield said he will see if he can drum up enough support to justify seeking another vote. Presenting the bill on the Senate floor, Stubblefield said allowing the manufacture and sale of food and drink containing marijuana could lead to accidental consumption of the drug by children. Orlando Democratic State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith and Lake Worth Democratic State Senator Jeff Clemens want people to stop going to jail or prison for possessing small amounts of marijuana in Florida. The pair of lawmakers introduced bills this week that would make possession of 1 ounce or less of cannabis a civil violation rather than a misdemeanor. Punishment would come in the form of fines and community service rather than jail time. Smith cited data from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement that shows over 90% of misdemeanor drug arrests, about 40,000 a year, in Florida involved marijuana. The data also show a steady decline in such arrests from 49,000 in 2010 to 39,000 in 2015. He also cited an ACLU report that determined Florida spent $228 million enforcing marijuana laws in 2010. The city of Oakland has ramped up its counterattack to the U.S. war on drugs, expanding its one-of-a-kind program to help people jailed for marijuana crimes to enter the booming California cannabis industry. Major changes approved Tuesday redefine who is eligible for an equity permit. Besides Oakland residents arrested within the city for pot crimes dating back to 1996, the permits are available to residents living at least 10 of the past 20 years in police beats torn apart by the war on drugs. Their income must also be below 80% of the city's average median income. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Thursday, March 9th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
My name's Davey, and I want to tell you about my friend, Glitch. He's done some pretty dopey things, like rollerblading, down a roller coaster. He even thought he could be a pro wrestler. Then he thought he could fly. And once, some kids tried to get him to do drugs.
Beat it! I've done some dopey things, but I'll never do dope.
Drug free's the way to be.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association in the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Grandchildren now don't write a thank you for the Christmas presents. They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Animal Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog, and they don't like them.
Okay, maybe you're high, too.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Yesterday on PBS's News Hour, they had a great article up. Scientists say the government's only pot farm has moldy samples and no federal testing standards. Now, this is something we have known for years and years here at the Russ Belville Show. For the past 10 years, I have been privileged to know LV Musica, one of the two remaining federal medical marijuana patients, along with Irv Rosenfeld, a stockbroker in Florida. The program had been had as many as 28 patients involved in it. Those patients have either passed away or lost their doctors over time, to the point where just Irv and Elvy remain as the only two people in America receiving 8 or 9 ounces of marijuana from the federal government every month for years and years now, decades now, from this pot farm. Now, the farm is at the University of Mississippi, and it uh, is it's justified by the single convention treaties, the treaties on drugs at the United Nations that the United States is a signatory to. And these treaties allow for the production of cannabis by a government, as well as other controlled drugs like opium, for example, so long as that government follows certain restrictions and regulations. That is, they only have one place where they're growing it. It's got security. It's following the precepts of the treaties and so forth. So the University of Mississippi is the United States' version of our UN-mandated or UN-allowed cannabis farm. Another person who's involved in this story is Dr. Sue Sisley, a friend of the show who's been a guest many times. She is the only researcher in America right now who has approval from the Food and Drug Administration and the National Institutes of Drug Abuse to go forward on a post-traumatic stress study involving veterans trying to determine if the use of cannabis is beneficial for their post-traumatic stress. Because of this, she has to get her cannabis from the University of Mississippi pot farm. Now, she is in Arizona, a state that's got medical marijuana, but she can't access any of that medical marijuana because this is controlled by FDA and NIDA. She must use the weed that comes from the University of Mississippi. So nearly 2 years after she got her grant to study this, she got her first shipment of U.S. marijuana from the federal government. According to the story on PBS, quote, "But minutes later, as she opened the packets to weigh the drug, as required by the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, her enthusiasm turned to dismay. It didn't look like marijuana. Most of it looked like green talcum powder." Oh, man, I've heard of some ditchweed in the past, but my goodness. The quote from Dr. Sisley says, "It didn't resemble cannabis. It didn't smell like cannabis." And then they found in laboratory testing that some of the samples were contaminated with mold, and other samples didn't match the potency that Dr. Sisley had requested for the study. She says, quote, "They weren't able to produce what we were asking for," end quote. Now, this weed that they got, far substandard, isn't going to help anybody when it comes to studying whether or not medical marijuana is going to help our veterans. I have seen this marijuana. I have seen the rolled joints, in Irv's tin, in Elvie's tin, and I can confirm that this is nothing that anybody in a legal medical marijuana state would call medicine. It's nothing that anyone in a legal recreational state would even call ditchweed. It's some terrible marijuana. Now, NIDA, according to the PBS story, says this is the first time researchers have expressed concern about mold or potency testing. Neither the agency nor the University of Mississippi test samples for mold before they're shipped. How's that? How do you like knowing that up to 28 people in the United States of America, starting with Robert Randall in 1978, all the way through Irv and Elvie today, are being shipped substandard marijuana that the government isn't even testing for contaminants? How many people in the past may have smoked a moldy sample of this government weed and done themselves more harm than good? This is despicable on our government's part. And as far as NIDA saying this is the first time anyone's ever expressed any concern, well, times are changing. Researchers are beginning to understand more about cannabis. They're in these states that have legal medical cannabis programs. They're able to access and see people who have access to fantastic marijuana, and they see the great results they get from that. This is not a coincidence. I believe this is not a coincidence that the federal government is producing lousy substandard weed, because by producing lousy substandard weed and making that the only source of weed you can study, you're guaranteed to get some lower or poor results from that study. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy on the government's part. The folks in Colorado can't believe this. Mike Van Dyke, he's the chief of toxicology with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. They're funding the study. And he says, quote, "Our biggest concern is patient safety. The lack of a federal regulatory structure makes it a huge challenge. We don't have all the information we'd like to have," end quote. No standards whatsoever. In one sample that Dr. Sisley got, it was billed as having 13% THC. Already we're talking about samples of cannabis at 13% THC, about half the potency of what veterans and other patients are using in the medical marijuana states to deal with their symptoms, to deal with their issues. But okay, 13% THC she orders. She has it tested at an independent lab in Colorado, and it's 8% THC. 8% rather than 13. So a third the potency of what we find veterans and other patients using in the medical marijuana states. And according to the PBS report, subsequent testing at the University of Illinois Chicago confirmed the presence of total yeast and mold, trace amounts of lead. Now, the lead amounts were below the levels considered to be hazardous, but still, every tiny amount of lead that you get into your body is never excreted. You continue to build lead up in your body throughout your entire life. So if you're one of these patients who got into the investigative new drug program in let's say, the 80s, and have been smoking that government medical marijuana for a couple decades, who knows how much lead you've accumulated in your system thanks to these terrible samples, thanks to this lack of testing and safety procedures from our federal government. Now, the Chicago tests found total yeast and mold counts in samples ranging from 23,000 to 64,000. And they say anything more than 10,000 is usually bad. Rebecca Matthews, who oversees clinical trials for MAPS, says the elevated counts were found in samples that never left the freezer before testing. In samples that were inadvertently defrosted, the counts were even higher, as high as 110,000, 11 times greater than the threshold that they're looking for of 10,000. This is definitely something that would not be happening if we could pass the Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act of 2017. It is only marijuana remaining in Schedule 1 of the Federal Controlled Substances Act that leads to all of these problems that we talk about day after day after day on this show. This federal prohibition is not just restricting people's access in the states that don't have medical marijuana programs. It is actively harming two people that have medical marijuana coming to them from the federal government. This is an important concern. We've had one of the agencies in Colorado told the Mississippi facility had, quote, approximately 185 batches of cannabis at varying concentrations of THC and CBD. And what they're trying to say here, what the federal pot farm thinks you ought to do is that if you want to have different varieties, you want to test out different ranges of THC and CBD, quote, they may be blended to achieve specific cannabinoid concentrations of interest to researchers. Well, that seems to be counterproductive, doesn't it? The whole point of this research is to determine which cannabis strains might be most effective for the patients that need them. The government's saying, ah, hell, we'll just take a whole bunch of strains, we'll grind it all up, whatever you need. You need some of that and some of this and some of that, mix it all together, you'll get a 2-to-1 ratio like you're looking for. Everything will be just fine. Ignoring the entourage effect, ignoring all of the constituent cannabinoids, most of which we really don't know a whole lot about yet. This is another instance of the government just trying to run roughshod over the science, not understanding what is involved here in the use of a botanical. This is fairly common. They don't really know what's going on when it comes to using cannabis as a medicine. Their entire paradigm is set up around the idea of extracting certain molecules, single molecules, that can be given in a reliable, dose-dependent manner, that we can understand exactly what this molecule does and that molecule does. It's not that they don't want to understand it. They just can't understand it. They can't understand things like an entourage effect or getting around the idea of a trial and error with different plant varieties to try to find out what's going to work best for you. It offends their sensibilities as medical professionals and scientists to have this sort of easygoing attitude toward a medicine. They can't get their minds around not getting it into a specific molecule, into a specific pill of a specific weight or a specific dose. It just violates everything they hold sacred.
You know, there are times where I've fallen off the wagon.
All right, that sound means that it is time for our union-mandated safety briefing. It's 20 after in the Mountain Time Zone. Happy 420 to the folks in Denver. When we come back, we're taking a look at a report right here in the state of Oregon showing that stoned mayhem on the freeways never happened after legalization. We're right back after this. New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we take a look at a report coming out of the state of Oregon where our Measure 91 mandated there be a study conducted by the state to make recommendations about marijuana and driving. One of the big concerns people have about marijuana legalization is what will we do about the stoned drivers? And so many of our opponents predicted if we legalized marijuana, the next thing you know, there'd be stoned mayhem on the freeways. There'd be wrecks, there'd be fatalities. It would just be a nightmare. Well, according to this report just broke today, this morning on OPB, our public radio, that the new study indicates that didn't happen. There was no stone mayhem on the freeways. Back in 2004, when Oregon only had medical and underground marijuana, there were 13 traffic fatalities involving marijuana. In 2015, once we got legal pot being sold recreationally, 16 people died in marijuana-related traffic accidents. That's right. From 2004 to 2015, as medical marijuana became more and more ubiquitous, as the patient rolls climbed over 10,000, over 50,000, as high as 70,000 patients, as we legalized marijuana and allowed all adults to go shopping in the medical marijuana dispensaries, TJ Sheehy from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission says, quote, "To this point, as a result of legalization, we haven't seen a large spike or epidemic of THC driving." End quote. Now, this is significant because the first two states that legalized marijuana, Colorado and Washington, both established a marijuana blood concentration limit for drivers. In Washington, it's a per se limit. If you're above 5 nanograms per milliliter, guilty. No appeal. You are just guilty. That's the way it is, regardless of how unimpaired you were. In Colorado, it's not per se. It's a presumptive inference, which means we figure you're too stoned to drive, but we'll give you a chance to talk your way out of it. Either way, you test above 5 in Colorado or Washington, and you got some problems. In Oregon, We do not have such a per se limit. In fact, when we were negotiating to get support for Measure 91, numerous funders suggested that we needed to have a per se DUI in there. And God bless them, Anthony Johnson and the people behind Measure 91 said that was a deal breaker. No per se DUIDs. We'll go ahead and study it. We'll go ahead and take a look at it. We'll try to make recommendations to keep the roads safe. But we're going to keep the status quo. That is, Oregon cops can pull you over if they think you're impaired. If they can prove you're impaired, you get a DUI. The reason behind this, of course, is because marijuana's metabolite and its main ingredient are fat soluble. THC and its metabolite are both fat soluble. It can stay in the body for up to weeks. Thus, testing how much marijuana we have in our system only tells us that we've smoked marijuana recently. Doesn't tell us we smoked it too recently and got behind the wheel. It doesn't tell us that we're too impaired. So as we go through this, I do want to make a citation of one particular point in the study. Because as the study gets to its conclusions, let me read to you the part that's concerning me. This was number, let's see if I can find where that was listed. Oh, I'm sorry, I lost the place. But the point it was making had to do with the detection of THC and the fact that it is not metabolized the same way as it's metabolized in as alcohol is metabolized. So we don't have any sort of magic number that one can bring up to discuss, you know, whether or not someone is too impaired to drive under the influence of marijuana. But the thing I have been predicting for a long time is that because of this fact, they are going to start pushing for the idea that it's not whether you're too impaired to get behind the wheel, but whether or not you were too irresponsible by getting behind the wheel too soon. This was point number 5 in their executive summary. I'll just read it to you straight. For a per se standard for THC to be established equivalent to the 0.08 BAC standard, two specific areas of research need to be more fully developed. First, standardized field detection tools must be created and tested that are able to detect recent use and impairment separate from levels of THC that may be due to chronic but non-recent marijuana use. Second, research must be conducted to isolate the dose-response relationship of THC and impairment. So, again, that line, the tests need to be created and tested that are able to detect recent use and impairment. So I have a feeling that what's going to happen here is that they're going to start to look at the research that shows that anyone that's smoked pot within the past couple of hours shows to have risks associated with driving. And then they'll come up with those breathalyzer tests that we've reported on earlier that can detect THC in the breath that only lasts within 2 hours of smoking. And they will use that as their excuse. They will say, aha, we've detected that you've smoked within 2 hours. People that smoke within 2 hours, generally speaking, are too impaired to drive. Whether you specifically are too impaired or not is irrelevant. Generally speaking, everyone's too impaired when they are 2 hours within smoking. And so it'll no longer be driving under the influence of drugs. It'll be driving because you were too irresponsible. They'll say, the 2 hour window is recent enough for you to be under the influence. That's the way this is going to get argued. But I guess the good news out of this study is at the very end of it, its last conclusion is that there's no reason to change the status quo in Oregon based on current data. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got a replay of Cannabis Chronicles from the Cannabis Collaborative Conference last month, where George Zimmer, the founder of Men's Warehouse, delivered the keynote address on cannabis and capitalism. And then in the Radical Rant, I've got blistering audio from Jeff Sessions threatening RICO against marijuana.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey, everybody,
it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Hey, this is great, man.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show.
Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Canna Business Chronicles.
Good morning, everybody. Let me get this out of the way so you don't have to wait till the end. I like the way you look, I guarantee it. I want to thank our hosts for inviting me to join you in beautiful and always green Portland for the kickoff of the Cannabis Collaborative Conference. I look around this room and there are a lot of people who have dedicated their lives and in some cases risked their freedom to bring marijuana out of the shadows and to help end the failed war on drugs. Each of you is a pioneer and a leader and a true patriotic American. Being a leader is difficult, particularly when you have to fight unfair and prejudiced public opinion, as Steph was talking about a moment ago. But the good news is that public opinion has changed dramatically in our favor. California passed Proposition 64 last election day, making adult use of marijuana legal by over 56% of the vote. That translates into a landslide victory of over 1.5 million votes. I should point out that this does not go into effect until New Year's Day forthcoming. So if you go to California, make sure you have a medical card. In 1995, quite some time ago, I gathered a group of businessmen who shared my commitment to marijuana reform, and we got together on the Monterey Bay and actually planned what became known as Prop 215. The invitation that I sent out to my friends back in 95 said simply that the DEA is requesting the pleasure of your company at this meeting. And everybody asked me, what did DEA mean? And it meant, since we were on Monterey Bay, the Dunes Entertainment Authority. That day, I committed the not insignificant sum of $500,000 to begin the signature gathering process for Prop 215. My colleagues, George Soros, Peter Lewis, and John Sperling, joined me in that effort, and we were able to raise the money necessary to get 215 on the 96th ballot in California. It was a hard-fought campaign during which five current and former presidents of the United States made a commercial against us, but we were able to prevail. And this really jump-started the process of sensible drug reform. Our campaign has changed minds and changed hearts. I take great pride whenever I see a newspaper or magazine talking about medical marijuana, because I do feel somewhat responsible for its success. There have been many bumps along the way, as Steph just commented on. There are many rogue U.S. attorneys around the country that are trying to harass medical marijuana providers. For those of us who have been following this closely, it seems like we take two steps forward and then one step back. Finally, on November 8th, 2016, despite the distressing election news concerning the presidential election, I was at a party in downtown Oakland celebrating the end of cannabis prohibition. Let me say that again. The end of cannabis prohibition. I've been working on this issue. I've been working on this issue for over 50 years, since I started college in 1966. And by the way, there is a report on one of the cable news stations that I've been smoking marijuana for 50 years. That is absolutely untrue. That's an old report. It's now 51 years. In my lifetime, I have experienced Richard Nixon and the Schaefer Commission in the early 1970s rejecting marijuana at that time as having no medical benefit. Nancy Reagan in the 80s with the Just Say No campaign. And my favorite, President Clinton in the 90s with his I Didn't Inhale. As we all know, this cannabis prohibition has resulted in billions of dollars in potential lost revenues, as well as millions of lives that have been adversely impacted, usually involving lawyers and jail time. The victory against prohibition last year in California and the victories that we've had in other states, like here in Oregon, in Washington, Washington, D.C., Alaska, Colorado, Nevada. The list is growing, as Steph said. It's now over 40 states that have addressed this. And it really has accomplished three things. Number one, we have, I think, successfully stopped the demonization of cannabis and made recreational cannabis no different than beer, wine, and alcohol. Second, by ending the policy of mass incarceration, we have had millions of people successfully released from jail, all because the government decided to criminalize a plant. But the most important result of the last 20 years is that we are on the threshold now of creating an economic boom in this new emerging industry. I know that Steph talked a little bit of concern about the new Attorney General, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. I'm not quite as concerned as Steph, and I'll tell you why. Even though it was published that during an interview 25 years ago, Sessions made the comment that he thought the Ku Klux Klan was okay until he found out they smoked marijuana, I don't believe that President Trump is going to be able to stop the public momentum that has already developed. I think that if Attorney General Sessions were to try to set up the bus that went on after Prop 215 was passed, I think that he would find tremendous opposition. First of all, if you look at the picture of President Trump sitting in the White House with all the Silicon Valley execs, you'll notice that sitting right to the president's left was Peter Thiel, who's a great venture capitalist in the Bay Area and who has invested in a company which is already investing in the marijuana business. So I think it is unlikely that President Trump is going to move against us. As you heard, we are a $6.5 billion industry, but that's just beginning. And as many people know, we probably will become the largest agricultural crop in the entire country. A lot of business leaders are now getting involved in investing in marijuana, and I really think that if Mr. Thiel's support doesn't carry the day, that there are enough significant Americans that President Trump will not be able to change what we have already achieved. Now, what are the challenges that we have in this business? Well, we've heard a little bit about the banking challenge, and it really is a problem because this is a large business to be done in cash. It creates many problems, including a possibility of increased armed robberies. Banking is prohibited in this business, as are credit unions, but there are people working on this problem. In California, the state treasurer, John Chang, has convened the Cannabis Banking Working Group, which is comprised of experts from the cannabis industry, banks, tax agencies, regulators, and law enforcement to propose workable solutions to the cannabis banking challenge. In the state of Ohio, they passed a law, HB 523, which creates a closed-loop system for medical marijuana patients in Ohio, where they're able to put up money in the form of a deposit and then have that applied against their medical marijuana purchases. These, of course, will not solve the problem permanently. Only complete and full legalization will enable the federal banking laws to be adjusted so that we can participate completely. Now, the next problem, as I think many of you here know, is that the IRS has an odd way of taxing marijuana businesses. The IRS code, Section 280E, says no deduction or credit shall be allowed for any amount paid or incurred during the taxable year in carrying on any trade or business if such trade or business consists of trafficking in controlled substances, which means substances defined as Schedule I or Schedule II. This means that we are not allowed to deduct normal business expenses, but only deduct the actual cost of the product. This has become a way for the federal government to transfer what would be rightfully state and local tax revenue to the federal government through the IRS. I'm sure this is going to be up for change in the next few years. Right now, people in the cannabis industry are being forced to pay 40 to 70% to the IRS, which is just not sustainable. But there's one other financial problem, and that is that because we're locked out of the regular system, it becomes very hard to predict what the outcomes are going to be in the medical marijuana business. Without that predictability, capital formation, investment growth strategies, commercial lines of credit, debt service, and most importantly, the return on investment are not able to be calculated. In short, the kind of reasonable, predictable financial issues found in any normal business must be brought into our business. Now, there's one request that I'd like to leave you with, and this is a personal request because we are now starting to build a new industry. As you know, I built the Men's Warehouse starting in 1973, and I left about 4 years ago, primarily because of a disagreement concerning stakeholder capitalism versus shareholder capitalism. Shareholder capitalism is simply where the job of the CEO is to maximize shareholder return. Stakeholder capitalism, and I love being a capitalist, by the way, simply acknowledges that every business has many stakeholders beyond the shareholders, the employees, the customers, the communities, even the vendors, all have a vested interest in how a company conducts its business and not just in the outcome. What I'd like to leave you with is my wish that as we develop this new cannabis industry, that we make sure that it's a stakeholder industry and not just a shareholder industry, that we make sure that we have not just the profits that we're looking for, but that we look at the human condition that we are working at. I mean, most recently, we read about the Carrier Air Conditioning Company in Indianapolis that was closing a factory, and Trump got them to keep the factory open. When I read that, I thought, gee, that's what stakeholder capitalism is really all about, where you don't destroy a community just so you can make an extra dime for the shareholders. And we now have this wonderful opportunity to set the example, because I don't believe that shareholder capitalism, as it's been practiced in the United States since the Civil War, is sustainable. I don't think that you can ask people to maximize profits and maximize the communities at the same time. So my hope for everybody here is that as you go about creating your for-profit businesses, that you keep in mind that there are many stakeholders in your company, not just the investors. I've saved a little time, so if anybody would like to ask me any questions, we have a couple of minutes. If not, then carry on. Have a good day. Thank you.
I do have a question. Can you elaborate a little bit more what a stakeholder business would look like, or how to go about setting that up?
Right, thanks. A stakeholder is, and this is just my definition. So the workforce are stakeholders. Without unions, it's harder to see that, but collectively, the employees are stakeholders. Certainly, the customers are stakeholders. They care, as you heard, about whether there are pesticides being used on the product. Shareholders are also stakeholders, but so are the communities in which we do business, and I even include the vendors or suppliers to our companies. These stakeholders all have a vested interest in how we conduct our capitalistic business going forward to make sure that we build a sustainable system. I hope that answers it. Thanks.
That's George Zimmer speaking at the Cannabis Collaborative Conference last month here in Portland, Oregon, speaking to the need of stakeholder capitalism in marijuana. Couldn't agree more. Stay tuned. We got time for a radical rant coming up here at the end of this hour. Attorney General Jeff Sessions was on the Hugh Hewitt show today and had some rather startling things to say about how the federal government might go about prosecuting the states that have legal marijuana. We'll play you some clips from that coming up next. And then in hour two, we've got a look at some Colorado pot shop stings for underage sales. Kevin Samet and Patrick Kennedy are at it again. And plenty more here from the Russ Belville Show.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Criminalizing marijuana is costing us a fortune.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
All right, welcome back, everybody. For the Radical Rant today, I'm taking a look at the Hugh Hewitt Show. And what is it with these conservatives and their redundant names? You got Hugh Hewitt, Lars Larson, Chris Christie. Anyway, on the Hugh Hewitt Show today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions was on, and they had a discussion about numerous topics, one of which was the enforcement of federal marijuana laws. And Hugh Hewitt brought this up in a question where he asked how Sessions might go about prosecuting the states that have legalized marijuana. And this is an example of not just the Sessions comments, but also how those of us in the marijuana media are reacting to them. I'm going to play the full clip for you so you can get the full context of this. You can hear the whole thing from top to bottom. It's just a couple minutes long, and then we'll break it down. This is Hugh Hewitt talking to Jeff Sessions earlier this morning.
Let's talk about the rule of law. I have a piece coming out in the Washington Post about this on Sunday. Attorney General Sessions, one RICO prosecution against one marijuana retailer in one state that has so-called legalization ends this facade and this flaunting of the supremacy clause. Will you be bringing such a case?
We will. Marijuana is against federal law, and that applies in states where they may have repeal their own anti-marijuana laws. So, yes, we will enforce law in an appropriate way nationwide. It's not possible for the federal government, of course, to take over everything the local police used to do in a state that's legalized it. And I'm not in favor of legalization of marijuana. I think it's a more dangerous drug than a lot of people realize. I don't think we're going to be a better community if marijuana is sold in every corner grocery store.
No, it would, but it would take literally one racketeering influence, corrupt organization prosecution to take all the money from one retailer, and the message would be sent. I mean, if you want to send that message, you can send it. Do you think you're going to send it?
Well, we'll be evaluating how we want to handle that. I think it's a little more complicated than one RICO case, I got to tell you. Places like Colorado, it's just sprung up a lot of different independent entities that are moving marijuana, and it's also being moved interstate, not just
yes.
in the home state. And neighbors are complaining and filed lawsuits against them. So it's a serious matter, in my opinion. And I just came from a big rally in New Hampshire yesterday, Hugh. This opioid problem is just huge. There were 9,000 high school and junior high school students there. A mother I met who had lost a son 3 months before, a child, and she said there were 50 more mothers there who'd lost children speaking to those kids. We've had this huge opioid surge in America. 120 people a day die from drug overdose. And I do believe that, and the president has issued an order to the Department of Justice to crack down on drugs and these international cartels that are moving this fentanyl that's so deadly into our country. And we're going to step up that in a very vigorous way, as I talked to the United States attorneys yesterday by conference call.
So that's the complete clip from the Hugh Hewitt Show discussing marijuana and the possible use of RICO, the statute that they use to go after mobsters, to go after state legal marijuana operations. And it uncovers an interesting way that I reacted to it this morning when I first read it. When I first read the remarks, I was getting them off of the transcript from the Hugh Hewitt Show. And as it was written, it said, "Will you be bringing such a case?" referring to a RICO case. And the way they wrote it on the Hugh Hewitt transcript was, from Jeff Sessions, "We will, comma, marijuana is against federal law, comma, and that applies in states where they may have repealed their own anti-marijuana laws." So I saw that and went, oh my God, a direct question. He was asked, will you pursue a RICO case? And he said, we will, marijuana is against federal law. Then I posted this as fast as I could, you know, because it's a breaking news story. And I started getting tweets back from a couple of really good friends of mine in the movement. Calico Castile, Wiz Calico, who used to be my intern, and Tom Angel from Marijuana Moment and Mass Roots. And they both pointed out that Sessions wasn't actually saying we will as an answer to Hugh Hewitt's question, are you going to be pursuing RICO cases? He instead was saying, we will something, 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 but he cut himself off and restarted his discussion. Let me play that little bit of that for you just to get what I'm talking about.
One RICO prosecution against one marijuana retailer in one state that has so-called legalization ends this facade and this flaunting of the supremacy clause. Will you be bringing such a case?
Will you be bringing such a case, a RICO case, to which Sessions replied?
We will... Marijuana is against federal law, and that applies in states where they may have repealed their own anti-marijuana laws. So, yes, we will enforce law in an appropriate way nationwide.
So he was saying, we will, and then cut himself off. Now, when I first heard that, my interpretation of it was, we will, and he was about to say that he was going to go for RICO or something else, but then caught himself in the same way like he realized when he was speaking to Senator Al Franken and he spilled the beans on the whole meeting with the Russians thing. To me, it sounded like he was saying, we will, and then went, oh shit, I better not say anything about that. We're supposed to keep a lid on that. And then went back to the anodyne comments of, well, marijuana is against federal law. We're going to find the best way to enforce federal law. But the points by Calico and Tom were valid. I can't really say that he was answering we will to prosecuting a RICO case. However, we can take from this discussion that it's not off the table. He didn't reject that they would go forward with a RICO case. So we shall see what comes out of this. There's some more I want to say about this, some more in the clips that I think bears repeating and some analysis. So we'll get to that here at the top of hour two. For those of you listening on the podcast, that's the end of hour one. So thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and views you can use for the cannabis community. For those of you watching live on RadicalRust.com and YouTube.com, stay tuned. Hour two is next. We've got more on those quotes. We've got a underage sting in Colorado mountain towns. We got Kevin Samet and Patrick Kennedy, the Joker and Riddler to my Batman, pimping a big marijuana scare in the Washington Post today. We got some more stats out of Pennsylvania on opiates versus marijuana and plenty more. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.